but they were obviously not trying to tell her. What's going on? Everything cool between y'all? She can tell you better than I can. Jake stood up and kissed Coconut on the forehead. So I'ma let her do that and go grab another beer. Jake quickly dismissed himself and pimped into the kitchen. Farrah looked at him as he peered into the refrigerator. Girl, what's up with him? She whispered. And what is he asking you to do that you're obviously uncomfortable with? It's a long story, Farrah. I really need your help right now, but I'm not sure how you're going to take it. The last thing I need you to be is mad at me, since we're cool again. Farrah rubbed her leg. What's up? Stop fucking around and spit it out. That's kind of what I wanted to talk to you about when I showed up at your place that day. Farrah knew there was a real reason and hoped it didn't have anything to do with Slade, like she originally thought. It ain't about Slade, is it? I mean, you not gonna tell me you like him or some shit like that, are you? I saw how you were looking at him that day, and I wasn't feeling it. Coconut frowned. I don't know what you're talking about, Farrah. She laughed. Don't get me wrong, Slade is fine and all, but he ain't my type. Farrah exhaled. Oh, well, what's up? I'm really feeling Jake, girl, to the point where if that nigga dumped me, I might lose my mind and my lifestyle. You see all this shit I got? She flashed her rings and pointed at her Birkin bag on the love seat. This nigga is official, and I've known him all my life. Coconut, you telling me things I already know. Remember, I've been knowing you forever, but how do I play into all of this? She took two quick breaths. Well, the thing is, he had a fantasy of fucking with me and one of my friends. We talked about it in the past, but I wasn't ready to deal with it back then. Eventually, he left it alone until now. Farrah's skin warmed. And he chose you. Farrah backed away and frowned. It wasn't like she couldn't get with the freaky shit. As a matter of fact, it made her feel good when she explored her wild side. To take it a step further, Coconut and Farrah kissed each other's boxes on a regular, so it wasn't a thing, but they never talked about what they did behind closed doors to anyone else. And they certainly never considered bringing in a third party. They preferred to blame alcohol for their promiscuous activities. You told him we went there with each other before? She whispered, looking behind her to see where he was. His back faced their direction, so she focused back on Coconut. What if the shit gets out and he tells somebody else? Coconut pushed her playfully on the leg. Yes, I told him, and Jake's way cool about that kind of shit. As a matter of fact, he's turned on by it. Normally, we bring in an outsider, but recently he shared with me that he wanted to see what it would be like to be with you. Coconut wore a smile, but she looked like she was breaking down inside. How do you feel about that? Honestly, because you look like you ain't feeling the shit. I want him to feel like he can have everything with me. Like he don't have to cheat because our bedroom is open to any of his fantasies. You know bitches out there would jump at a chance to be with Jake, including some of my friends. She eyed Farrah. Don't look at me, because before today, I didn't even fuck with Jake. I know it's not you, she reassured her. I didn't want to tell you, but Shannon went at him the other day when we were over Rhonda's house. Farrah furrowed her brows. You were at Rhonda's house after she lost the baby? Yes, and I'm not fucking with that bitch no more either, Farrah. Something is way off about her. Do you know she lied about her entire pregnancy? What are you talking about? Her stomach was as big as a globe. Jake is cool with Knight, and he came out the other day, she paused. Apparently, Rhonda went to the doctors months before the baby was due and was told that her baby was dead inside of her body. They said she needed to undergo emergency surgery to remove the fetus. She could have died leaving the baby in her body. Instead of letting them do surgery, she ran out. She was so scared she was going to lose Knight when he found out that she decided to lie. Knight found out by one of the doctors the other day. When did she know the baby was dead inside of her? For 2 months, Farrah. That bitch was sick. They saying Rhonda walking around D.C. right now, talking to herself and all kinds of shit like that. You better be careful, though. She kept talking about you for some reason. I already saw her. Farrah recalled her eyes. She approached me when I went to grab something to eat. She didn't look right then, but I had no idea. She shook her head. I actually felt responsible for her losing the baby. Now I want to kill this bitch. I blamed you at first, too. Who would have known she could do something so crazy? Still, be careful. You never know what somebody like her might do. I'm gonna get that bitch way before she gets me, especially now. Anyway, you gonna do it, what I asked you about, Jake? She put her hands together like she was praying. Please, Farrah, do this for me. I need this. You gotta know. I wouldn't ask if it wasn't so serious. Her decision wasn't rocket science. Jake was fine. She loved coconut, and she was bored out of her mind. She had so much negative shit going on in her life that she didn't have a problem with having a little fun. But there was one thing. Her piggy bank was bare. She didn't have a cent to her name. And her property manager was threatening to throw her out if she didn't come up with the rent. So if they wanted her to be a part of their threesome, it was going to cost. I'll do it, on one condition. Coconut jumped up and down in place. Girl, you don't even know what this means to me. She grinned, as if she had just asked her to be a bridesmaid instead of share her boyfriend's bed. He gonna finally realize that there ain't shit I won't do for him. Whew, I owe you big time for this shit. Tell me about it. Hold up, Coconut. We not finished talking business yet. Business? Yes, because if I get down like that for y'all, what's in it for me? She paused. I mean, Jake gets his rocks off and you get to keep the man you always wanted. But what about me? Coconut backed up a little to look at her friend seriously. Are you playing? She frowned. You want us to pay you? The question is, are you serious? Farrah combated. She just lost her sister, she didn't have a man, and she killed for blood. She was not starting to care much about what other people thought about her. It's cool for you to ask me to be part of your little situation, but it's not cool for me to ask y'all to look out. Times are hard for me, Coconut. I mean, don't be so selfish. I'm not saying it like that. It's just... Let's be fair, Coconut, Jake interrupted, joining the conversation. If she wants some paper, it ain't like we can't make that happen. He looked at Farrah and licked his lips. He wore all over his face what he had planned for her. But if I'm gonna look after you like that, I expect a little more in return. I'm into some shit you might not be down with, but if we're paying, I want my money's worth. Farrah thought briefly about Randy's sadistic ass. When she was with him, she was pissed on, bitten, beaten, and made to feel less than. There was nothing he could do outside of breaking her skin and or killing her that would make her go away. She needed the money, and to be honest, she looked forward to the experience. If you looking after me and blessing my pockets, there ain't shit I wouldn't do for you. Coconut saw the look in her eyes and grew worried. She recalled conversations she had with Lessa about Farrah's shiesty behavior. Farrah, whatever happened to Lessa, your old roommate? From what I understand, she's doing okay. For now. Chapter 12. Farrah. If you got an hour and a lunch break, I can show you exactly what I'm talking about. Farrah cruised down the darkening streets with the sounds of Keisha Cole blasting from her stereo. An open bottle of wine sat tucked in her purse in the passenger seat. While she sipped on the rest from a cream-colored coffee cup, she had a lot on her mind and a lot on her list to take care of that evening. She looked forward to a time when she no longer had to look over her shoulders or worry about people out to get her. When she pulled up in front of a small brick house, she sat outside for a minute and took it all in. Huge green trees lined the front, and decorations from holidays past still donned the door. She wondered what it would be like to live in a house like this. As a child, did the person she was looking for always feel safe and loved? The thought made her envious and at the same time ready for war. She downed everything in her cup, took a deep breath, and grabbed her purse. Before exiting the car, she surveyed her surroundings to be sure the coast was clear. When it was, she eased out of her car and approached the house. The moment the door opened, Lessa stumbled back when she saw Farrah's face. The blue cashmere sweater Lessa sported lit up her eyes and made her even more beautiful. "How you been, Lessa?" Farrah tried to stare inside from where she stood. "How does it feel to live back with your mother? You two getting along better, I hope?" Farrah laughed. "I can't believe this. When was the last time you were at a loss for words? Especially concerning the word on the street is that you can't keep my name out of your mouth." "Farrah, what are you doing here? How did you know where I lived?" "As long as you on the East Coast, Lessa, I'm gonna always be able to find you," she responded, leaving out how she searched the net for her mother's information. "Now I asked you a fucking question. Why do you got a problem with keeping my name in your mouth? Don't you know what happens to snitches, or do I have to remind you?" Lessa looked off balanced when she saw Farrah reaching into her purse. Afraid for her life, she ran into her house, screaming her lungs out. Farrah was right on her heels, ready to finish what she started, until she glanced at the mirror on the wall. In it, she saw a uniformed officer sitting on the sofa. When the person turned, she saw it was Nadia Gibson, and the joke was on her. This was the last person on earth she wanted or needed to see. Farrah backed out slowly at first before flying out of the house at lightning speed. On her way down the steps, she tripped and fell, sending the wine bottle she planned to crack over Les's head crashing to the ground. Wine covered everything, and glass crunched under her boots as she made it to her car. Nervous about being arrested, she softly bumped the car in front of her as she wiggled out of the parking space and back into traffic. From the rearview mirror, she could see Nadia waving at her with an evil grin on her face. Although Farrah considered this a defeat, she wasn't ready to claim it as a win for the officer either. She would do whatever she could do to silence anybody trying to ruin her life, including a hating-ass cop. Fair arrived at the blood drive bright and early the next day, eager to do her thing. Normally she preferred to move in the darkness, but the night before had proven to be unsatisfactory. She couldn't get her hands on Lessa, and her search for Eleanor had once again ended in vain. It was time to do something she loved, hunt for blood. When her phone rang and she saw it was an unknown number, she figured it was her father. It had been a while since she'd spoken to him, and she wondered how he was doing since hearing the news. She felt like a coward for not telling him Chloe was missing and Brownie was dead, but at the moment, she couldn't handle his reaction. "Hello, Daddy. How you holding up?"
"Baby girl, I'm not good."
Farrah's stomach rumbled.
"You can't even imagine what it's like to lose a child and the love of your life at the same time."
He paused and took a deep breath.
"I'm so sorry, Daddy,"
Farrah said, observing a truck behind her from the rearview mirror.
"I wish you didn't have to be alone."
"Don't worry too much about me. The good thing about my situation is I'm in the right place to take out my frustrations, and I wanted you to know that it may be a long time before I talk to you again."
"What? Why?"
she yelled.
"Let's just say that problem you told me about the last time you talked to me was taken care of. You won't be doing anything to anybody else ever."
Farrah's heart rate increased. "Don't
say it over the phone. Just know that it's not a problem anymore and that I don't want you out there worrying about me. If they pin it on me, I might be in solitary for a long time. And I just wanted you to know, in case you don't hear from me, tell Shadow and Mia to be easy and that I love them too. Bye, baby girl."
He ended the call, and for a second, Farrah sat in silence. Part of her was relieved that Tank was dead and could not harm him, but the other part blamed herself because had she tried not to rob Tank, he would not be in jail trying to take his life. She hated Randy and hoped at some point
he got exactly what he deserved. In fact, she prayed on it. The truck she was worried about was still behind her, so she turned around and it pulled off.
"Are you following me?"
When the vehicle was out of sight, she observed the building hosting the blood drive. She decided to select her next victim there, figuring anybody donating would most likely have a clean bill of health. The blue sweater dress she wore presented her ass in 3D, and she looked so edible that only a gay man could deny her. Once inside of the building, she strolled to the counter, grabbed an application, and scanned the room for donors. After completing her paperwork, she sat in the lobby and waited for her fake name to be called. Although she had no intention of giving blood, she had to at least look the part. Bad prospect after bad prospect crawled inside, and she was starting to believe the blood drive was a useless idea. After an hour of waiting and ignoring her name when it was yelled, she was about to leave. That was until she finally saw her prospect. He was tall, handsome, and chocolate, just like she liked. He walked in with a swag about himself that said he was the only man in the room. Farrah had to have him. The only problem was he wasn't sitting anywhere near her. Quick on her feet, she strutted toward the bathroom to stall. She hoped the seat she'd chosen earlier would be taken, which would give her an excuse to find another one next to her potential victim. When she walked out of the restroom, she saw her plan worked when she eyed some girl going through her fake Gucci in her seat. Beaming, Farrah whipped her hair over her shoulder and switched toward her prize. Her hair moved effortlessly with every step she made, and she was sure there wasn't a soft dick in the house. When she made it across the room, she wiggled into the seat next to him and said, "How long do you think we have to wait? It seems like I've been here all day." She paused only to breathe. "I sure could find something else better to do with my time." He was totally involved with a text on his phone and said, "Not sure. I just got here myself." But when he finally observed her, he grinned as he scanned her from top to bottom. His eyes said it all. He loved what he saw. There was a quiet shyness about him that turned her on, and to her mind, he was the perfect catch. "Why are you looking at me like that?" she asked. "No reason," he lied. "Anyway, usually when I come, it doesn't take this long." He looked over at the counter. "I think you can reschedule if you have to. They need you, not the other way around." She crossed her legs. "You do this all the time? Donate blood?" "Whenever I can," he admitted. "I feel like I'm doing my part by giving blood, you know?" She felt like she'd hit the jackpot, finding someone who felt like he was doing something in his life because he donated blood was a gold mine. "What do you mean?" He sat back in his plastic white seat. "My sister died when I was in the military serving in Iraq. She was in a car accident caused by a drunk driver. She lost a lot of blood, and even though it didn't save her, I donate out of memory." "What made you donate?"
"I just love blood."
"That's different."
"Different is good. At least that's what I think."
She paused.
"Can I ask you a question?"
"Sweetheart, as sexy as you are, you can ask me anything you want. That's on everything."
Her next question was serious, because if he had said no, she would leave him alone and he would inevitably save his own life.
"Can I make you famous?" He laughed hardly.
"That's an odd question. How does one make one famous?"
She put her hand over his crotch and rubbed it lightly. His eyes popped open, and he hoped no one was looking. When he looked across the room, the employee who handled the paperwork was staring dead in their direction.
"If you got an hour and a lunch break, I can show you exactly what I'm talking about. I think my schedule just cleared up."
When Farrah followed him to a nice house in Virginia, she was impressed. Since it was mid-afternoon on a weekday, there wasn't a car on the street. She figured most people were at work, and that was even better. When she followed him inside, she was disappointed. that the decor didn't match her first impression. There wasn't much furniture, and it looked like someone had just moved in.
"This is your house?"
she asked as she followed him. "Nah, not exactly. Well, I'm renting a room." They walked toward the back.
"Did you say you're renting a room?"
she asked, disgusted.
"How old are you, if you don't mind me asking?"
He turned around and grinned at her.
"Old enough to satisfy your every need."
He took a key out of his pocket and placed it in a gold doorknob.
"Is that enough for you? Besides, you're gonna make me famous, right?"
Silence. Once inside the room, she saw how dreary it was. She wanted to roll over and die. Everything was juvenile. There were posters all over the walls of models in swimsuits. The bed was twin-sized, and the sheets were on the floor. To make matters worse, his clothes were thrown everywhere, and it smelled like he hadn't taken out the trash in a year.
"Can I use your bathroom right quick?"
She stepped on a plastic water bottle, and it crackled under the weight of her shoe.
"I want to freshen up."
Sure. It's out there." He removed his wallet and keys and threw them on the dresser.
"But don't keep me waiting too long. You got me ready to see how you gonna make me famous. It was the only thing I could think of on the way over here."
"I bet it was." She frowned, trying not to touch anything.
"Anyway, does somebody live in this house with you? It seems so empty."
"I have more roommates, but they not home at this hour. Most of them go to work and college. But since I can never be sure, because I don't know their schedule, knock on the bathroom door first. I wouldn't want you walking in on something you don't want to see."
He laughed.
Irritated, she plodded down the hallway and couldn't get over the feeling of wanting to smash his face in and run. When she reached another door, she knew it was the bathroom because of the sign that read, "All residents, please knock before entering."
Is this a house or a group home?
She slogged into the bathroom. Once inside, she threw cold water on her face and stared at her face in the mirror. Although her skin was clearer, it was obvious that she needed more blood. So she had to calm herself down to follow the plan. When she thought he was sexy, shy, horny bum, it was sweet. But now she was turned off that she was contemplated leaving. She reasoned that Elizabeth Bathory would not allow a messy room to stop her from achieving her goal, and neither would she. She checked her purse for her meds Shadow got for her, and then after giving herself the energy she needed to go back, she walked into his room. When she opened the door, he was in the bed, toes spread, with extra long brown dick in his hands. Now she couldn't wait to kill his ass.
"Get over here. Got me waiting all day?"
He jerked himself so hard, the muscles of his arms buckled.
"I know that pussy stinks so good, don't it, baby? I hope you ain't washed up too much, because I like to smell a juicy pussy."
"What you doing?" She frowned from the door. "When you take your clothes off so quick?"
"The moment you left. Now stop fucking around. I'm waiting on you,"
he said, with his tongue hanging out the side of his mouth. Farrah threw her purse on the table next to the door, and it landed on the floor. She started to pick it up, but thought, fuck it. When in Rome, be as nasty as everyone else. Slowly, she eased out of her clothing and stood in front of him for a minute to drive him crazy. She couldn't lie. As much as she loved blood, there was something about tasting the goods before she killed them that just did it for her.
"I'm trying to have a little fun with you, too. But can I have something to drink first? I want to be right for you, baby. I hope you don't mind."
"You want to drink now?" he asked with attitude. It was obvious that the only thing he wanted to do was fuck.
"I was already ready to dig into them walls. I'm not even thinking about getting anything to drink."
"And you can have these walls, but you gotta get me something to drink first. And to be honest, it feels like you have the heat on in hell in here."
"I hope you're not fucking around with me, Farrah."
He scooted out of the bed with his swollen dick pointed in her direction.
"Otherwise, you came here for nothing."
"I'm not fucking with you."
"At least not anyway," she giggled.
Silence. He stomped out of the bedroom furiously. While he was within the house, she removed a small pill from her purse. After the close call she had with the dude she killed with her shoe, she decided it was better to have her victims limp and weak than aware and strong. A few minutes later, he returned with two Cokes. This is all we got. He raised them in the air. I can give you water, but it'll be from the faucet. He handed her one and placed the other down. No, this is fine, but can you get me a glass of ice too? She placed her hand over the can. This is not as cold as I like my drinks. I need some ice. He sulked. Dang, why can't you just drink the shit? It's cold enough. You ain't in the gym or nothing. It may be cold enough to quench your thirst, but it ain't doing shit for me. Please, just get me some ice. When you get back, this pussy will be waiting on you. Although the longer you procrastinate, the more easily I'm turned off. It ain't nothing for me to go home and play with my own pussy instead. Hearing this, he scurried to the kitchen, and she plopped the pill into his soda. She shook it a few times so it would dissolve. When he returned, she poured her soda over the ice and performed like there was nothing wrong. Apparently, he was extra thirsty because he drank his until he swallowed the last drop. All she could do was smile, realizing that in a moment, she would have what she came for. When he was done, he jumped in the bed and fussed with a condom on his dresser. Now we can stop the games and get to it, he told her, stroking his dick again. Get over here. Whatever you want, baby. Farrah climbed on top of him and kissed him softly on the lips. He pulled her on top of his dick and pushed into her gushiness. When he tapped her jelly walls and could go no farther, he moved to the left and then the right. He filled her up, and her pussy syrup poured all over him. Fuck this pussy, baby, she nibbled on his ear. Just like that. Work that shit. You like the shit, don't you? He asked, already knowing the answer. Tell me how much you like this dick. He slapped her ass and spread her cheeks as he continued to plow inside of her. Damn. Ooh, you feel so good. Farrah continued to bash her pussy into him as he met her thrust for thrust. When she first entered his crib, she wasn't feeling him one bit. But now that she saw how good he could fuck, she decided to enjoy herself and go with the flow. It was funny. She always knew how to pick them. If I would have known you'd have been this good, he said softly, I would have left with you the moment I saw you walk out of the bathroom. He was feeling suddenly lightheaded. She wasn't interested in anything he had to say anymore. She thumped her pussy against his dick 5 more times, and when the time was right, came all over him. Her body shivered as she gripped his shoulders and dug her fingernails into his flesh. Mmm, that shit feels so good. When he felt her gush and heard her moan, he pushed all the way into her and filled her up with nut. It was the best sex he'd had in a long time. Damn. You feel so fucking good. He barely had enough energy to move and figured she wore him out. Farrah kissed him softly on the neck. Oh, thank you, honey. You're not so bad yourself. He laughed, stroking her meaty ass cheeks. You a cool motherfucker too. What are you talking about? She asked, wiggling her waist over him again. I ain't never had no bitch ask me if they could make me famous before. His hand slid off of her body. He was exhausted and could no longer hold them up. What do you mean by that shit? She kissed him again, and then she fell into his chest. You really want to know? He chuckled. Yeah, what you gonna do, tape me and sell them? I wouldn't dream of doing anything like that, baby. I meant this. She sliced into his jugular vein and sucked his blood. Her teeth dug into his flesh, and she tried to drink everything that pumped through his veins. He was weakened and couldn't defend himself. Suddenly, his life flashed before his eyes. Before long, he wasn't moving at all. She sucked and sucked until the roof of her mouth ached and her gut was full. There was something about the kill that made her feel invincible. She could almost feel her skin brighten up. Standing over him, she admired her work. In her opinion, he looked much more beautiful dead. His eyes were closed, and blood rested all over his chest and neck. Who needed Slade when she was queen of her world. The way she lived life allowed her to play God. She only wished she had someone she could share her experience with, someone like her. Shadow and Mia wanted no part of her lifestyle, as she couldn't dare tell anyone else for fear she would be caught. For now, she would have to keep her secrets to herself. She was still thinking that when she heard someone come into the house.
"I wonder if she knows some nigga just walked into the house," Grant said to Judge,
as they watched the house Farrah had been inside for an hour. They were in a gray rental car used to follow her every move.
"Who knows?" Judge shrugged. "Maybe she's about to get into some crazy threesome. What I wonder is, what is she doing at a blood drive?"
"Maybe she really does believe she's some kind of vampire," Grant told him. When Farrah crawled out of the window with a sweater dress in her shoes and jacket under her arm, they sat up straight.
"Hold up. Do you see that shit?"
Grant asked, pointing at the window.
"This bitch is loony,"
Judge responded, shaking his head. "Something is really off about her. And why is her face covered in
blood?"
Grant responded, looking at his brother. "I don't know what's going on with this bitch, but it ain't good," Judge said under his breath. "The question is, should we tell Slade or keep the shit to ourselves?" Chapter 13. Nadia Gibson.
"If you give her some time, she'll hang herself."
"I'm sorry about leaving you so early, Joe. I had a meeting regarding this Farrah Cotton bitch that I didn't want to miss," Nadia said, sitting in her police cruiser outside a motel. She looked over at the small plastic baggie to her right, the real reason for her speedy exit.
"I hope you're not mad with me."
"Why would I be mad? I mean, I was wondering where you were, but I figured it was work-related. My only problem is that I didn't get a chance to dig into that pussy before you left."
"Last night was right.
When you off that shit, you can go non-stop." He paused. "Anyway, I was calling you on something else. Did you get a chance to look at the paper?"
Nadia raised the wrinkled paper in her lap. "Of course," she read it. She looked at it 10 times that morning, going over detail after detail. The main story was the 6 men who were all murdered with a slice of the jugular vein. The worst part was, they didn't have a suspect. Nadia had spoken with Lessa and her friends. She was aware that Farrah was a self-proclaimed vampire, but without any proof, they couldn't attribute the crimes to her.
"Unfortunately, I read it," she sighed.
"Do you really think Farrah is involved in these two?"
"I don't know. That's what you have to find out," he said seriously. "And later tonight, when you're done, I want you back over here and in my bed, so we can have part two."
She giggled. "What about coming into the office today?" she asked him.
"I was kind of hoping to stay out and question a few people in the field."
"Do what you have to do. After all, that's one of the benefits of fucking the boss."
When they ended the call, she leaned back into her seat and turned up the slow jams playing in the background. Her mind was all over the place, and it was time to get it right. In her mind, the police car she captained gave her the right to do anything she wanted, including snorting coke behind the driver's seat. She opened the small plastic bag, poured a small hill on the corner of her hand, and inhaled. When she was done, she wiped her nose and leaned back.
"What the fuck am I doing?" she asked herself out loud. "Why can't I stop this shit?"
No one responded, and she didn't want an authentic answer anyway. Besides, she fucked better, talked slicker, and seemed emboldened by the magic dust. She'd been on and off the drug for 6 months. Every attempt to stay clean ended in her fucking some nigga she met in the club, only to be kicked out the next morning. It wasn't until she started fucking Captain Joe Walton that she had some normalcy in her life. He accepted the fact that she snorted coke, provided her with a place to sleep, and because he was her boss, he covered her absences at work, which meant
she would always be employed. No, she didn't love Joe, but for coke, she would do what she had to do. When all the powder in her nose was gone, she eased out of her patrol car and knocked on the hotel room where Beverly Glasser had told her to meet her. She moved anxiously in place and knocked again heavily when there was no answer. "Where the fuck is this bitch at?" she asked herself.
"If you talking about this bitch," Beverly said as she opened the door.
"I was working." She went about cleaning the room, leaving the door ajar. Nadia was flustered. Although she was in charge of the case, Beverly always made her feel like a child, and she never quite knew what to say to her.
"I'm sorry. I didn't know you heard me. I wasn't talking about you anyway."
She rubbed her clammy hands together.
"Sure you weren't, Nadia. And I own this hotel, not just work in it."
Beverly was an older woman with black and gray hair and a serious face. Her light blue uniform clung against her hefty body, and the gold name badge protruded from her breast. Whenever she moved, it was obvious that she meant business.
"Don't just stand out there. Come on inside."
Nadia ambled inside, closed the door, and leaned against it. But the magic powder had her so busy-bodied that she couldn't stay still for long. Instead, she shuffled and looked extremely uncomfortable. Beverly scanned her and shook her head.
"So, what have you found out about my son?"
She tossed a naked pillow on the floor.
"By this point, you had plenty of time to hear something. So I don't want any more excuses."
She tucked the sheet under the edge of the bed. "Tell me something good."
"I can't give you any information before I have it, Beverly."
Her hand hovered over the handle of her gun. Not because she was threatened, but to fake power. Not to mention, she's had a death in her family recently, and her family is guarding her closely. Beverly stopped in place.
"So everyone who loses a family member gets away with murder?"
"Huh." Nadia remained silent.
"Don't play with me, officer."
She pointed a finger in her face.
"I don't know if I told you, but I don't like games. And I'm trying not to play you. It's just that we should be a little more sensitive at this moment."
"If you give her some time, she'll hang herself. Just the other day, I was interviewing her ex-roommate Lessa and her friends, and Farrah came over to the house. I don't know what she was there to do, but she got away from the scene before I could ask. Trust me, we will get this Farrah Cotton."
Beverly laughed. "You have two faces," she pointed at her. "At first, I thought I liked one of them, because I felt I knew where you were coming from. But now I'm not so sure about that. You see, you remind me of a tree. You change with the seasons, and that makes you unstable."
"What's that supposed to mean?"
"It means that I'm tired of your mood swings and your fucking excuses. What that bitch is going through doesn't make my heart ache any less. My son is missing, and you led me to believe that Farrah had something to do with it, and I want her to pay."
She threw the comforter on the bed.
"I know what you're saying, ma'am. And it's like I told you, we're investigating this case, but everything we do doesn't include getting into Farrah's face every 5 minutes. I actually visited the movie theater the other day to get the videotape from the evening your son went missing. Suspiciously, they don't know where it is. The manager, Gene Hershey, is a first-class asshole. He claims that on the day Amika went missing at the movie theater, they weren't taping. I thought he was hiding something, so we got a search warrant. We couldn't find the tape, so we are working overtime on this matter."
Beverly stopped making the bed, wiped her hands on her dress, and said, "Sit down." Nadia looked at the light pink comforter in disgust and said,
"I'm fine over here. Thanks anyway."
Beverly said, "I'm not in the business of saying what I want done more than once. So I'm asking that you not make me." High and half out of her mind, Nadia took a seat, although her leg moved rapidly under her body.
"Good.
Now I know that you've been doing this for years, But I also know you got a drug problem. You've had it for a while. But you didn't think I would find out. But when it comes to my son, I find out everything.
I don't know what you're talking about. Nadia tried to look out into space to avoid eye contact, but it didn't work.
If lying to yourself makes it easier, so be it. I will say this. I'm not going to tell them people you work for that you got a problem. As a matter of fact, it makes me feel better having something over you.
Nadia grew angry. If there was one thing she hated, it was being blackmailed.
Just because I'm on drugs doesn't mean I can't do my job.
Beverly laughed.
I'm serious. You've been trying to handle this investigation since I first told you I was on the case, and it's making my job difficult.
Making your job difficult? She repeated with a glare.
Making your job difficult. She huffed. Bitch, I lost my only son.
Beverly walked up to her and slapped her face.
Don't tell me what the fuck you can do. Just do it.
She pointed at her finger.
I'm tired of you dragging your feet. And if I have to put fire to it, that's exactly what I intend on doing.
She walked away and sat on the edge of the bed.
You know how it feels to have your heart tell you that your son is dead. Even though you can't put him to rest.
No. She stuttered.
Exactly. But I do.
Tears rolled down her cheeks.
Now, I'm not under any illusions that my son is alive. I've made peace with that weeks ago. But it doesn't stop me from wanting to know what happened.
Beverly,
shut the fuck up and listen to what the fuck I'm saying.
I want that bitch investigated, and I want an eye kept on her at all times. If you follow her long enough, she'll give us exactly what we need. I'm sure of it.
She stood back up. In fact, I found out that she's been rolling with some high yellow bitch and her boyfriend.
If you're referring to Lessa Carmine, she started, still feeling her cheek on fire. She left town after Farrah showed up at her house. She looks just like her. This young lady looks different. She had blonde streaks in her hair and could pass for white. Keep an eye on them, all of them, and pretty soon, something will come up.
Chapter 14, Slade.
If you were to go so far as to denounce your family, you were never a baker anyway.
The Baker boys walked Audio up to the check-in counter at the Baltimore-Washington International Airport. Since Chloe died, Audio couldn't bring himself to a place of closure, so they thought it best that he leave and go back to Mississippi. Right before Audio checked in, he turned around and faced his brothers.
I don't know why y'all doing this, he said.
Even at the moment, he reeked of vodka.
We still haven't found Knox. I thought that was the plan. None of us was leaving without our brother, and we were all going home together.
He looked at Major and Killa.
Let me help y'all, please.
You gotta go, man, Slade interjected.
His heart was heavy when he heard the sadness in his voice, but nothing about what he said would change the decision.
I know you want to stay, but we can't take the risk of something happening to you. Aunt B gonna take care of you and help you get over this thing. I'm not talking to you, he yelled in his face. All you care about is yourself and that bitch.
He pointed his finger into his chest.
If you give a fuck about me, you wouldn't be doing none of this shit.
Hearing how his brother felt about him ripped his heart open. Of course he cared about him. He loved him more than he could explain. But the way he was carrying on in D.C. would get either himself or the entire family killed.
Audio, you know I care about you.
He placed his hand on the back of his head and pulled him toward him. Their foreheads touched.
You my kid brother. It's just, get the fuck off me,
he yelled, pushing him into Killa.
If something happens to me back home, it's gonna be your fault.
Audio, you going too far,
Killa said combatively.
Now, you've been down here for months, drunk, and you almost got yourself killed. We understand you love Chloe. I feel you on that shit. But us sending you back on that plane is on you, not us. If y'all send me on that plane, I'm no longer a baker. You hear what I'm saying?
He looked at all of them. Slade's head was slumped, and his shoulders were hunched, until he heard his words. Hearing his statement made him as hard as stone.
If you would go as far as to denounce your family, you were never a baker anyway.
Silence.
I guess you're right,
Audio yelled, storming away. Slade stood in the middle of the airport and watched his kid brother until he was out of view.
Come on, man, Killa said in a low voice. You gotta see your peoples before judging Grant. I don't know what's up with them, but they've been following her like crazy. The other day I heard them talking about something they saw. When I walked into the room, they got quiet.
Slade didn't move. He couldn't move. He was fucked up by what Audio said and wondered if there was truth to his statement. Yes, he was wrapped up in thoughts about Farrah, but as far as they knew, he didn't fuck with her anymore. He didn't call her, didn't visit her, or ask about her. He even started keeping time with someone regular to make the days go by.
Go see Farrah, Slade, Major added. Audio gonna get over that shit.
I hope so.
Slade paced the area outside of Farrah's door for 5 minutes. He hadn't seen her in months and had a feeling she was with someone new. He just hoped he'd never see them together. When he gathered enough confidence, he knocked on the door and waited. When the door crept open, he saw how beautiful Farrah was. His heart melted. The long black gown she wore clung to her curves, and he was enamored all over again. Why was she so fucking sexy? Why couldn't he have her? Why couldn't he love her like his heart begged? And he remembered she could possibly have had something to do with his missing brother.
Can I come in for a minute? I want to talk to you.
She remained standing at the door, preventing him from entering. Her body trembled, although her eyes were stern. What do you want with me, Slade? We have nothing to talk about. He sighed and tried to find the right words to say to her. He could be a bully when his heart was involved, and he knew it. But this was about business, not pleasure. You gonna make me talk to you out here?
She folded her arms in her chest.
Come on, Farrah. The least we could do is talk in private. You made it plain how you want your relationship to be, so I'm not going to try to change your mind anymore. I moved on, Slade. I'm good over here.
Farrah, I understand we're over. That's not what I'm here to talk to you about.
Her head hung because his words cut deep. Prior to that moment, it was only a possibility that they would never be together again. Now, it was a fact.
If you don't want to talk about us, what do you want?
He stepped closer and stuffed his hands in his pockets.
I'm here because I want to talk to you about Knox. Have you found anything about Eleanor yet?
She sighed and shook her head.
I told you all I know about the situation. Don't you think I want her found too? I don't want this shit over my head for the rest of my life, Slade.
I know what you're thinking.
You couldn't begin to know what I'm thinking. Yes, I do. You're thinking that I had something to do with his disappearance, and it doesn't make sense to me. And I finally know that there's nothing I can do to change your mind. Not to mention the fact that every time I turn around, one of your family members is staring at me.
The fuck is that supposed to mean?
She pointed down the hall at Judge. Man, can you please go in the apartment?
Slade told him.
I'm talking to her right now.
Grant told me to keep my eyes on the door.
Well, what Grant gonna do if I punch you in the face, huh?
He hurried away, leaving them alone.
You see what I'm saying? I've never seen this many country niggas in all my life.
He frowned upon her hearing her comment. So they gotta be here for me. Am I right or wrong?
Farrah, can I come in, please? I'm not trying to talk to you about the shit in the hallway. You owe me that at least.
She reluctantly opened the door and walked inside.
He followed, closing the door behind him.
You write about my people being town, to find out what's up with Knox.
He stuffed his hands into his pockets.
And they gonna be questioning you, too. I'm here to try to prevent that.
I knew that shit.
She fell into her sofa. So what, they gonna do, hurt me? Kill me? You gonna let them get me, Slade?
Don't say that shit. You know how I feel about you.
He paced in place. I wish you would have told me you had my brother's phone. I could have defended you better. But the way shit played out, I found out the moment they did.
You should have defended me whether I had his phone or not, Slade. You promised to take care of me. You promised to love me forever.
She shook her head.
To quote you correctly, the first day we fucked, you said, I told myself, if I ever fall in love again, that I would never abandon her when she needed me most.
Huh. Well, I needed you the most, and you failed me.
Are you a man of your word or a liar?
Slade's jaw clenched. Everything she said aimed right at his heart.
Farrah, don't do this shit to me.
Don't do what?
She stood up and approached him.
Don't love you? Don't believe that you are a man of your word?
She shook her head.
You don't know who I was willing to be just to be with you, Slade. You don't know what I was willing to give up. I never loved a human being more than I loved you, and I doubt I ever will.
What do you mean that you were willing to give up?
I've done some things I can't take back. Some things I dream about most nights, but to be with you, I was willing to change it all.
Slade looked over her and frowned.
She was evil, he was sure. But why was he still drawn to her?
Did any of those things have to do with my brother being missing?
Farrah backed up and slapped him before rushing to the door.
Get the fuck out! She opened the door. Now!
Farrah, I'm sorry.
Fuck your sorry! I want you out my house, Slade.
When he didn't move, she said, Don't make me call the police. I know how much you hate them.
Slade trudged to the door.
He didn't want to leave, and he hated that they were parting on those terms.
I'm sorry for making you a promise I couldn't keep. I love you, Farrah, but I can't choose you over my family. I hope you understand that.
He walked out, leaving her alone. Slade entered Markey's apartment before going to his own. It was months later, and Markey still hadn't returned. The moment he walked inside and saw Major and Killa pacing the living room floor, he knew something was up.
Frightened, he rushed up to them and asked, What the fuck is going on? Somebody fucking with you?
Man, that nigga Randy and that same bum-ass nigga we saw at the gym shot at us?
Oh,
Killa yelled. I want this nigga's head, Slade, like yesterday.
Fuck you mean they shot at y'all?
We were taking my grocery shopping for Sunday dinner. We hadn't even gotten there yet when all of a sudden some niggas in a white van pulled up and started blasting at the car. Had it not been for Major handling the wheel and getting us out safe, we would be dead right now.
Slade was so angry. He was swerving in place. He told his mother that she needed to stay close to Platinum Lofts, but she never listened. He knew it wasn't her fault that she was shot at, but putting herself in harm's way was all the way foul.
Where is Ma now?
He looked toward the back of the apartment. Willie took her to get a weapon. At first, Slade wasn't feeling the fact that they were spending a lot of time together. He didn't want him trying to manipulate Della into convincing them to stay. It didn't take him long to remember that she was her own woman and could spot bullshit a mile away. He got three niggas with him, so she should be good.
Slade walked away from his brothers and leaned up against the wall. He thought about all of the things he was going to do to Randy and the man he knew as the albino when he got his hands on them.
On everything I love, I'm killing both of them niggas with my bare hands, and that's a promise.
Chapter 15, Farrah. I'm not much on talking to strangers.
Dressed in an all-black cat suit with a cute red jacket, Farrah stood in front of the mirror and observed her frame. She was certainly dressed for murder. She was just about to leave when her phone rang.
What's up, Coconut? She asked, skimming through her purse.
I don't have a lot of time to talk to you right now. I'm on my way out the door.
Okay. I was just calling to give you some information. Coconut sighed. If you're not so busy that you don't have time, never mind. Farrah hung up and was heading out the door when curiosity got the better of her. So she turned back around and called Coconut back. I got a few minutes. What were you going to tell me? I wanted to tell you that I'm supposed to be meeting Eleanor tomorrow. She called and asked if I needed anything. You want me to hook the meeting up? Farrah's temples thumped. This was the moment she was waiting for. Trying to remain calm again, she said, yeah, that'll work. When do you think you can do it? Anytime, Coconut replied. But did you want me to pick up something for you instead? You can pay me back later if you want. Nah, I want to buy my own. Just call me when you are on your way to see her. You got it. Coconut paused. Before you go, Jake want to know if we've seen each other later. Farrah rolled her eyes. Tell him it's cool with me, but I really gotta go. I'll talk to you later. Coconut's call saved her a trip later on in the week. With her schedule clear, she could indulge in her favorite pastime, the quest for blood. With a smile on her face, the moment she stepped out of the building, a man wearing a red jacket and a beautiful Asian girl approached her. Both of them were extremely attractive, and she always wondered if they were together or not. She'd seen them many times, and they always appeared fixated on her. You're Farrah Cotton, right? The girl said. It was a windy day, so her long brown hair whipped around her neck like a scarf. Who's asking? Farrah responded, prepared to gut her like a fish, if need be. I'm not much on talking to strangers. The girl giggled. There's no need to be violent. She smiled. Unless you're having fun anyway. She looked at the man. I'm Mayoni, and this is my boyfriend Carlton. We moved here a few months back and have been dying to meet you. But every time we try to talk to you, you're always coming and going. After dealing with Coconut and her boyfriend, she automatically assumed
it was menage a trois related.
Why y'all want to meet me?
You want the truth? Carlton inquired, with a light grin on his face.
I wouldn't ask if I didn't.
We wanted to meet you because we have a lot in common, Mayoni replied. And since the world is so small, we figured we'd introduce ourselves.
Well, I don't want any friends, so I prefer if you just come out with it.
Okay, he responded.
We wanted to meet you because we're vampires too. And not the kind of vampires you see on TV or know like that. We're consenting adults who enjoy blood and pain, just like you.
Farrah's face flushed. Who were they, and why did they assume they knew so much about her?
Well, that sounds like a personal problem to me.
We're not coming at you crazy or nothing, so there's no need for you to be on the defensive. Carlton continued. We just want you to have people you could relate to, because we know how it is to be alone.
First off, I don't know what you're talking about, but even if I did, why are you so interested in what I do? You don't even know me.
She looked between them. She preferred to do things sneakily in the night and wasn't into an audience. The only reason she didn't stomp off was because she wasn't interested in who they were.
We know more about you than you think, Mayoni advised.
I doubt that very seriously. Farrah rubbed her face, feeling a breakout coming along. We know that you keep doing things the way you have been doing. You're going to end up in jail, Mayoni added. We know that the car right there has been following you wherever you go.
Farrah turned around and saw a gray rental car in the distance. The people in it ducked, but she could still see their heads.
Who are they? Farrah asked.
We don't know, Mayoni said.
But they're definitely fans and have been following you for a while.
Farrah frowned. What is this all about?
Come with us, Mayoni persisted. Let us show you something, and if you don't like what you see, we won't even bother you again.
What about the car? She looked behind her.
We know how to shake them, Carlton replied. Just follow us.
Farrah was following Mayoni and Carlton until suddenly they pulled into a gas station along with a white car.
What are you doing now? She asked as she parked behind them. When she turned around, she exhaled when she didn't see the gray car.
She didn't know who was in it, but she had a feeling it was Baker-related. Mayoni and Carlton exited their car and approached the white one, which had been following behind the entire time. Do they have a follower, too?